all, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest, and, well, this evening our guest is Joan Vian. And Joan, in addition to be a world traveler and certainly going to all the international financial meetings, is also a financial consultant, money manager. But we've asked her this evening to come on to talk about what's happening to the world financial markets. Last week we saw the European Central Bank infuse, well, between the last Thursday and today, almost a third of $1 trillion into their financial system, for fear it was going to collapse here in the United States. They've increased the amount of money in circulation almost 10%, highly inflationary, but they are frightened to death that the whole system of debt is going to begin to unravel. And so we've asked Joan to come on this evening and give us an overview of how this house of cards, which is our fiat money system, really works. And you must understand, a fiat is a government declaration, and fiat money is when the government tells you money has worth, even though it has no worth, but insists that you can pay your debts with it, and you have to use it to pay your taxes. And it's a wonderful system until it all falls apart, and whether it be ancient Greece, ancient Rome, or whether it be the Weimar Republic, whether it be Russia, whether it be Bulgaria a few years ago, Argentina 3 or 4 years ago, or the world financial system today. There is no history, no incident in history where a fiat money system has survived, and usually it ends up, of course, impoverishing the public. Well, Joan, with that as a background, could you tell us what your take is, what's really happening, what can people do to protect themselves in times like this?
First of all, Dr. Stan, I would say that most of your listeners probably have not been foolish with investing their money. I don't think they probably went out and bought Goldman Sachs stock or mortgages in subprime mortgages unless somebody led them astray in a very serious way. So let's talk first about first of all about structure. Let me just say from a personal standpoint, I've been in this business for 25 years. That does not mean I have seen everything. That does not mean I know all the answers. But I'm going to give you my take. And in order to give you my take, I think it's important for us to talk about the structure of the market. Obviously, we are no longer in a national market. We are in a global market. In fact, Hillary Clinton last week gave a speech. She gave some comments, and she said that we are in an interdependent global economy. The Federal Reserve, in talking about the situation, talked about a, quote, robust global economy, unquote. I think we first need to understand that we're no longer talking about national, financial, or economic sovereignty. We are talking about a complete change in the structure of the world. Do I hear some music?
You hear some music, and I was just about to ask you to just hold that thought, but I think Joan is actually absolutely right. I mean, instead of course, having our leaders concerned about America, they are concerned about the global market. Instead of being concerned about American sovereignty and poverty, prosperity, they want to just transfer our wealth to other countries. They want to produce equitable distribution of wealth throughout the world. We'll be right back in just a moment. Go right ahead, Joan.
Let me say that I have seen these kinds of headlines before. I think it's very interesting, and I think we should remind ourselves. Let's just go back. I could talk about the 1988 market crises. I could talk about other market crises that I have seen. For those people who have my book, Global Straitjacket, I don't remember what chapter it is. I meant to grab a copy of my own book before I came on. But I think I have a chapter on economic or the market stability or something. And this happened in 1998, and the headlines were just as awful. You know, this is happening. We're in dire straits. I have seen where central banks have come in and they have pumped money in America before. I have seen where we've pumped money elsewhere. I mean, you know, this is all part and parcel of standard operating procedure in a global economy. I think that's one of the first things that we should say. Again, I have seen these headlines before. There was a time when these things would frighten me to pieces. They no longer frighten me, because I know that if I look and I listen carefully enough, I will find out the reasons for why we have this particular situation. I have seen over and over again, as I have been studying the global structure of the world, both political and economic, that everything happens, it's like everything is choreographed. I mean, this is almost like the parting of the Red Sea in the movie The Ten Commandments. Did they allow this? Yes. Did they know that this was going to happen? Yes. So let's see if we can find out some of the reasons for it. And then let's talk about what we can do to protect ourselves. But again, for example, in protecting ourselves, it would be a matter of making sure that you don't have a mortgage that you can't afford. If you already have too much house for the mortgage, I would have to say you better start getting on your knees, repenting, and praying. That's if you can't afford it. So, you know, there are some things that, you know, you can do, and some things that, depending on the situation, you may just have to roll with the flow and let things happen according to the market and according to your ability to hang on to that house or whatever the case may be. You know, life is hard. Life is hard. And I think that...
Well, hold that thought right there, Joan. We'll be back in just a moment with all of our stations. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joan was simply pointing out that she sees the headlines today. She's read them all before in years past. And the question she asked is, did the certainly the people in charge of the global economy anticipate this would happen? Her answer is yes. I mean, could they have prevented this? Yes, but they allowed it to happen. And the question is, why and what can you do? Because, believe me, there is no way that the things that are taking place today could have happened without the active help of people at the highest levels of the world financial system who are playing this thing as if it were an accordion. And, of course, that's why they used to call Sidney Alan Greenspan the maestro. He was the maestro. He conducted everything according to plan, and I believe he planned exactly what's going on today. But we notice that he has stepped aside. Well, pick the story up there, Joan. Joan says get out of debt. If you have a house you can't afford, you better start thinking of what you can do to protect that. But go on.
I said last that life is hard, and I think it's even more important for us to pray over everything we do. Lord, should I buy this or not? Should I buy this one or not? Lord, is this the time to do this? Lord, is this the time to do that? It is only God. It is only our personal relationship in Jesus Christ and our dependence on Him that will truly help navigate us in an evil, evil, wicked world. Now, speaking about an evil, wicked world, let me just say that, first of all, there is no accountability. There is no accountability for anybody in high key places. There is no accountability. The president is not accountable to Congress. Congress does not seem to be accountable to to the president. The Federal Reserve is not accountable to anyone. And that's, we have to start with the structure that we are part of. We are part of a fiat monetary system, as Dr. Stan said. And that is as a result of the Federal Reserve system that was set up in the United States in 1913. The Federal Reserve is a private corporation owned by a group of international bankers and the British royal family. I think we would be very naive to not think that if they didn't invest in the Bank of England, that that if they invested in the Bank of England, that they would also invest in other central banks around the world. Do I know this for a fact? No. But I don't think it's rocket science to understand that anybody in a key financial position would want to be in on something like a central bank to run the monetary system of various countries around the world. Why? Because they create the boom and the bust. They create the business cycle. They are not accountable to anybody. They just print money when they need. Where did all this money come in that was just printed up into the monetary system? Well, in essence, they created it. Very nice.
And I think it's so important that people understand they created it out of nothing. It's just they can create money out of nothing, and this is how they make their great fortunes. As long as people accept the money, why, and are forced to accept the money, why, they prosper and we lose. But go ahead.
And the other thing is that yes, they do create the money, but, and they also charge usurious prices. We are living in a time of usury, when everything has a price. I mean, when you start thinking about people who get money from the ATM paying $1 or $2 every time they get that money, people who charge paying anywhere from 18% to 35% interest, maybe 12%, maybe some people 9%, every time you use your credit card. It's an absolute scream when you take a look at all the different ways that there are fees and there are taxes and whatever else you want to add for use of money. So first of all, we have the Federal Reserve system, and there is no accountability. Second, our government has been a willing fool, an absolute willing fool, and I would have to say that everybody in Congress today and every president since Andrew Jackson are traitors to the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Constitution, excuse me. There are a few good people over the years, Thorkelson and a number of others who have been vigilant, but the number has dwindled. Government now, our congressmen and our senators, I don't know what they're doing, but I do know this, that they're giving away our sovereignty at every opportunity. And then there's the global world system. It started with the creation of the Bank for International Settlements in 1929. It was followed by the United Nations and the UN system, which is a global level of government that operates above the nation state. This is a major vehicle to destroy national sovereignty. The world has not been the same since 1944. That's when the IMF World Bank was started and then, or created, and then in 1945 with the United Nations. This is heinous. This is evil. This is hideous. And yet, all the countries of the world, they don't, you know, I asked Boutros-Ghali one time, I said, can any of the nations who are a member of the United Nations withdraw? And he looked at me, and he said, oh, well, why would they want to withdraw from the United Nations? Of course, they are free to do so, but there is no reason. Yeah, well, I've asked different people throughout the years, why don't you withdraw from the IMF? Why don't you withdraw from the World Bank? And a number of these African countries looked at me with great fear and said, no, there's no way. They would put economic sanctions if we tried to withdraw. The world is run by a global mafia called the United Nations and the UN system. In another program, Dr. Stan, we'll talk about the powers behind that and who runs this global mafia. In 1980, there was a law passed called the Monetary Deregulation Act. And that law basically changed the minimum interest rates that banks had to pay on savings accounts. And as a result, banks were, the interest rate structure was deregulated, taken away, and banks now can charge the going rate. So if they want to pay, if the going rate is 0.5% on savings, so be it. They'll charge you, they'll pay you gladly 0.5% on savings, and they'll charge you 8, 9, 10% on other personal loans, and anywhere from 9 to 25% or 32% on your charge card. I mean, you know, that's what happened in 1980. The end result was people moved their savings. I mean, how many people want 0.5% or they want 2% on their certificate of deposit or 3%? No way. So people went to the stock market. There are many, many studies out there, and they say, oh, you big, fat, slobby Americans, you're not saving. Well, yes, Americans are saving. They're saving in the stock market. And I have asked numerous economists, hey, why don't you make some changes here? Why don't you acknowledge that Americans do save, but it's in the stock market? Well, they don't want to do that, basically, because it would mess up their move to talk about why America has to be crashed and brought to its knees. In 1999, Congress passed the Monetary Deregulation Act. No. In 1999, they passed the H.R. 12, which was the Banking Modernization Act. That law repealed the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act. And the Glass-Steagall Act was put in place by two congressmen, Glass and Steagall, in 1933, as a way to protect you and me, the investor, against the excesses of the investment banks, which were and the not only the investment banks but the commercial banks that were lending money for people to invest in the 1920 in the stock market, which they say led to the 1929 crash. Let me just say that by repealing the Glass-Steagall Act, they have again created the same kind of situation whereby investment banks now have the ability to cross over and to create the same kind of excesses in the stock market that was created before the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act. So in essence, what I'm saying is that the investment banks, the international bankers, have been given a free card to do whatever they want to rape, rob, and pillage in how they conduct business in the stock market.
How can the investment banks invest in the stock market, or can they sell stocks to investors? How does that work?
Well, the investment banks, Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley or the Rothschild banks or the Morgan banks, they are the ones who bring a stock to market. And so in bringing a stock to market, they underwrite it, and then they offer it through their series of banks to the investor. And it's what they can do and what they can't do in bringing the process of bringing a stock public. And what the Glass-Steagall Act did was it put various firewalls in place between what an investment bank was and what a commercial bank was, so that your local commercial bank didn't bring stocks to market where you could buy on credit, you know, stocks in the stock market.
In other words, what we're really doing is encouraging speculation. Hang on there, we'll be back.
Yes, we are encouraging and setting up speculation.
Go right ahead, Joan.
So what we are now seeing is a whole lot more speculation. And I'm going to get to that when it comes to...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Houses and a lot of people, certainly could borrow money and build a new house or buy a new house that they couldn't afford. They made it so easy to borrow money, to have anything your heart's desired, and with low interest rates, and by getting the interest rates down, and then certainly doing everything they could to encourage consumption. They appealed to the greed of the people. And people went out on the limb further and further and further, buying everything in sight and figuring that, well, the house is going to go up, I can always mortgage it, or I'll come out of this somehow. without realizing, of course, that maybe one day the whole house of cards had come tumbling down and they'd be left there in the rubble that followed. Anyway, financially, why the government was encouraging people to act irresponsibly. Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. But you see, you know, we all have to look at the numbers of our own financial household. You know, I mean, I'll be very honest with you on radio. Here I am on radio. I don't know if we're coast to coast, but anyway, wherever we are. My husband and I realized we had too much credit card debt. And my credit card debt is, I think it's about one-third of what it was a year ago. I stopped spending. It's amazing what happens when you stop spending. It is amazing. Did you know that you have more money when you stop spending? Real simple. You stop spending. And so we are on our own debt repayment, but the bottom line is we have a mortgage we can afford. We have 80% equity in our home. We have 10 years left on our mortgage. My husband is driving a 15-year-old car. I have a 5-year-old car that's paid off. You know what I'm saying? We all have to look at our own resources. Satan is more than happy to get you in a position whereby he can steal your joy, he can steal your peace of mind, because you're up to your eyeballs in debt. And everybody's got to take a look at their own situation. I had somebody call me that I haven't talked to in a couple of years. And I said, where are you? Well, he moved from Dallas, Texas, up, I don't remember, Wyoming or Montana. He's building a house. He's cashing in some investments. He's paying all cash. I mean, you know, he said, hey, look, Joan, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. I might only have, you know, 20% debt on my house, but that doesn't mean that I'm free and clear. Why? Because somebody owns my mortgage. And speaking of owning mortgages, in a global market, in a system of excess where there truly are no checks and balances as to who's doing what, I was just reading an article about the current situation in which they were talking about Moody and Standard & Poor's, and how Moody's and Standard & Poor's were the ones who were in charge of, they were the ones in charge of rating subprime mortgages. And what they decided to do basically was, you know, they got lax in what they were to do, and so now they were giving A ratings to bonds that should have never had an A rating. Those bonds have now been sold globally all over the world, and the regulators are now looking at Standard & Poor's and Moody's and saying, oh, naughty, naughty. I mean, can you imagine that bonds that were, you know, so there's excesses throughout. The whole system, it's not only you and me, it's not only our government, it's not only the international bankers, but it is groups and organizations that were to be the vanguards of protecting the system. And so, you know, Standard & Poor's and Moody were supposed to be doing certain things with rating mortgages and rating bonds in a very conservative way, and they did not and have not, and that too has now accounted for some of the problems that we're seeing in the economy.
What they did is they told people who wanted to buy these debt obligations that they were AAA bonds.
That's right.
They should have been considered junk bonds, and the people believed Moody's and the others, and they bought them. And now suddenly they find out that they really are worth half of what they paid for them. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this wouldn't be so bad, except that a lot of the people, of course, who have actually, these large corporations that have bought these bonds, have bought them in a leveraged position. In other words, they went out and they leveraged it so that they really owe a great deal of money on what they bought that wasn't worth what they bought. So you pick up the story there.
What are we seeing? We are seeing excesses unwind. That's what we are seeing. You know, if you eat too much, you gain weight, and then your body pays for it, and at some point you have to unwind. That means lose weight. Or you have to start exercising to strengthen the muscle tone in your body if your muscles are too weak. I mean, you know, if you have poor posture, you're squeezing some of your organs in your body with your poor posture. You've got to straighten up your posture, and then your organs can breathe right or act right or process properly. You know, for everything there's a cause and effect. Let me go back to the comment that Hillary made, that the Federal Reserve made, that we are in a global economy, whether it's robust, whether it's interdependent. The two operative words today are global economy. All the barriers between the nation states are gone. That's what it says. We are interdependent. Whether it comes from the mouth of Hillary or Bill Clinton or George Bush 1 or George Bush 2 or whoever you hear, the bottom line is we are one. We are one. How else can we say that? World government. We are in world government. We're operating in a world governmental system. We have no more national or political sovereignty. How do we get people to understand that we are no longer our own? I don't know. But they're sending us a message. We are in a global economy. For your listeners, Dr. Stand, I have two economic newsletters. They're worth 36. I'd like to offer them for 24. One is called, one is on the Rothschilds and the financial strength of the world. And the other one is on the global economic structure of the world. That's a double newsletter. So they're worth $36. I'd like to offer them to your listeners, both of these newsletters for $24. I'm working on the follow-up.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment, Joan. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joan Vian, certainly one of our favorite guests. And Joan, in addition to certainly traveling the world and going to economic meetings and meeting all the world's leaders, certainly is also an economic advisor. She was just commenting that she has several newsletters and which she offers. One is on the global economic structure. The other is certainly on the influence of certain powerful families on what's going on in the world today. Do you want to let people know about those and how they can get them?
They can ask for them by calling 301-371-0541, 301-371-0541. We use Visa and MasterCard, and you can just say you want the offer on Dr. Stan's program.
And, of course, these are very important things. You have to understand how this game is played if you're going to be involved at all, because if you don't know the rules, why, there's no way you have any hope at all of staying in the game. An awful lot of people, I think, are going to get wiped out before this is over. Now, is that number you put out there the one for your financial services?
No, that's for the women's group.
All right, fine.
The two newsletters, I'm writing a third one for September, or a fourth one, however you want to count, which will talk about the global currency and the additional structural changes that I'm going to talk about. A global interdependent economy, what does that mean? I think I've talked on your program before about a global stock exchange. We are seeing the buyout of various stock exchanges worldwide occur. 2 years ago, the New York Stock Exchange went public. The NASDAQ went public about 3 years ago. Last year, the New York Stock Exchange bought out the Euronext, which is the European Stock Exchange. So the New York Stock Exchange is now the NYSE-Euronext. The NASDAQ bought 30% over a period of time of the London Stock Exchange. And they tried to make a buyout bid for all of the London Stock Exchange, the rest of it, 70%, and it didn't work. There are other stock exchanges that are in the process of merging. There's a possibility that the New York Stock Exchange might next buy the Japanese Stock Exchange. So we are in a period where all the national boundaries, all the national lines, everything is blurring.
Now, do you foresee the possibility of a global currency? Because it's pretty hard to have a global government without a global currency.
Absolutely. I'm coming to that.
Okay.
I'm coming to that. The global stock exchange now is one of the things that I have been following is that if you're going to have a global stock exchange, then what you need is a global regulator. A global regulator. And interestingly enough, there has been a move by Ben Bernanke, who says he would welcome he favors a UK United Kingdom style of regulation. So our government is in the process, in fact I think it's already been passed, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which was set up in 1934 to regulate the securities market, is now in the process of being changed. And instead of having a two-tier level of regulation where you have national regulation over securities and then you have state regulation, they're going to be merged into one. And they're going to change how they function from a rules-based system to a principle-based system, which is what the United Kingdom uses. And so we're seeing this huge move to change the U.S. securities regulators from a U.S.-based system to a U.K. style of regulation. Well, obviously, if the NASDAQ owns 30% of the London Stock Exchange and we're moving to a global stock exchange, then what we're seeing, and interestingly enough, why is it that the U.S. always adopts a British style of government or whatever the case may be? Well, that's a subject for another radio show, Dr. Stan. But, again, this is very important. Back in April and May, there were headlines on this new regulator and the need for a new securities type of regulator, but you don't see that anymore. And I truly believe that there's always behind all these headlines, there's something else happening that they need to change in order to move us further and deeper into a total global or globalized world. And so I think with I don't know the answer yet. Maybe I do know part of the answer, but I'm seeing what I have seen all these years, no matter what kind of problem, they've always found a way to solve it. Let's go back to the savings and loan crises of 1980. Do you remember that, Dr. Stan?
Oh, I certainly do.
Okay, you have a situation whereby all of a sudden interest rates went sky high, savings and loans held mortgages, and all of a sudden, guess what? They did not have enough liquidity. There's that word. Why? Because people they got stuck holding the high interest rate mortgages when interest rates dropped. it wasn't the fact that interest rates dropped. They didn't have any more liquidity to make mortgages because they had all these mortgages. The bottom line is, they went out of business.
And basically, what happened at that time is they got the interest rates up so high there was just no, and they shut down the money, and so there was no money available. And you needed that, you had something you wanted to sell. Nobody could borrow the money to buy it. And I had a lot of friends at that time who thought they were going to play the economic system. They had put in big developments, big condominiums, oceanside homes with the idea of selling them. And suddenly, nobody could buy them. Nobody could qualify for a loan, and the whole house of cards came down. And for a while, we had interest rates up to 21%. Go right ahead.
Well, that's about the time they passed the Monetary Deregulation Act, and they did that because people had money market funds, and so they were thrilled that for a very short period of time they got anywhere from 15 to 18% on their money market. But that's at the same time that they changed the interest rate ceilings that banks had to pay on their deposits, so that now banks can get away with paying 0.5% to 2% on savings and charge these horrible usurious rates for everything else. But you see, it did that was the time, so they jack up interest rates, they pass the Monetary Deregulation Act, they then ruin the savings and loans, and two things happened. Congress created the Resolution Trust Corporation, in which all the insiders became prominent members. There was no annual report. There was no bookkeeping or accounting. And all the insiders bought up the property across America. Most of it was, there were mortgages, but a lot of it was commercial. And they bought it up for what? 5-10 cents on the dollar. Look what we have. 20-some years later, they've made a whole lot of money at the market high. Who do you think was selling all this time? So they always have an opportunity for greed where they can come in and rape, rob, and pillage the people who fell for the trap that they were setting. So we now see that they're going to change our whole style of regulation of the stock exchange, and we're going to change to a British-based system. If we're going to change to a British-based system, what else in America is British? When the Queen made a visit, was she surveying one of her colonies? And I'm not talking former colony. Or was she truly here for just a nice little visit? And that brings us to a global currency. One of the recent articles that I read, I think it was in the Financial Times, talked about the fact that, well, if you're going to have all these imbalances, if you're going to have the dollar dropping to the extent that it has dropped, then perhaps what you need are regional currencies. Well, the euro is always already a regional currency, but the dollar is not. I've been reading about regional currencies since 1990. Will we have a regional currency? Of course, the Amero or whatever it's going to be called. By the way, when I was in Vienna, I don't know if I mentioned this on your program before, I interviewed Vincente Fox. And so I asked Mr. Fox about the free trade areas of the Americas. And he was like, "What? What? Oh, no, the free trade areas of the Americas is a long way off." And I said, "Well, what do you mean it's a long way off?" He said, "Oh, first you have to have regional alignments like NAFTA and MEDCRISUR and CAFTA." He says, "Oh, no, it's a long way off." So then I said to him, "Well, what about the Amero?" And he pretended not to know what the Amero was. And I finally said, "Well, what about a regional currency?" "Oh, no, that is a long way off." Well, I don't think I agree with him. But it's okay. I wanted to let him know that we the people down here on the lowest level understand a few things that they may think we don't know. Yes, a regional currency. There are those who say that we're going to have an economic crisis and that will precipitate the regional currency. I don't know if we need an economic crisis to precipitate a regional currency. Canada is our biggest trading partner. They are our biggest trading partner in the whole wide world. We share a common border. Much of our energy grid is interconnected with them. Through NORAD, there is a Canadian general that runs the NORAD system, that heads it up. You know, Dr. Stan, we may very well have a regional currency now without Americans calling it the Amero, but it being called by the peso, the dollar, and the Canadian dollar, you know. Are we on our way to a global currency? Absolutely. If you're going to have a world governmental system, you're going to have a world currency. In 1990, I read a book called Euroquake. And this book was a sea change. For me, it was a major sea change. Because he talked about the fact that the dollar, the Deutschmark, now the euro, and the yen, by the end of the 1990s, would be equal to one. And if you're going to have a world governmental system, if you're going to have a world stock exchange, if you're going to have a world regulator, if you're going to have this global level of government, you will have not only a global stock exchange, but you also will have a global army. And so we're seeing everything move in that direction where there are no barriers, there are no borders between the nation states. And what affects China in the stock market affects America. That happened earlier this year. What affects America now affects Germany or France or Britain or Peru. So we are seeing this whole move into an interdependent world. And I would also say along those lines that people should start watching where and who and what different world leaders speak in our Congress. For example, Queen Elizabeth, when I think it was Ronald Reagan, or was it Carter maybe, spoke to our Congress. She spoke for a British monarch spoke to our Congress for the first time. Under Bill Clinton, Tony Blair spoke to our Congress. The Queen recently spoke to the state Congress, State House in Virginia. We are seeing world leaders all over the world speak to each other's parliaments. Sorry. That says something. That signifies something. And what we are seeing in the market, to go back to the global market, to go back to the subprime, these headlines for me are nothing new. It's a matter of saying, okay, what else are they stripping away? What are they integrating? What are they harmonizing? But more importantly, these people have made their money with low interest and with high interest, and they will win because they will be able to buy your property or your asset for 50 cents or 5 cents on the dollar. And so it behooves us to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves in the decisions we make, in how we walk, in how we operate, and in how we pray.
And, of course, I think the borrower is always subservient to the lender and get out of debt, because that's how they're going to be able to get your assets. If you are in debt and you can't make the payment, they're going to swoop down, you know, like a band of vultures and take everything you have.
Let me just make a comment. Brown, Gordon Brown in England, has introduced some legislation. And part of the legislation is that he now wants to tax people a huge amount of money on the sale of their home, and if you don't have a mortgage, on the equity in your home.
Well, they're going to find a means, of course, of getting money from the people. Government is like a hungry lion. It never has enough. We need that money to fight our wars and more wars and more wars. Our guest has been Joan Dionne. Joan, once again, get your telephone number out there.
301, for those newsletters, it's 301-371-0541. For people who would like some advice or information, there is a cost. You can call 301-371-0540.
We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Joan, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I don't think I can say any more than what I have. For those people who are looking for specific answers, the specific answer is in you getting a hold of your own personal finances and understanding where you are, cutting your expenses, reducing debt, and basically asking God, if you have not, turn your finances over to Him. Let Him just show you His power and how He can work in your life and in your finances through a complete relationship with His Son, Jesus Christ.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and I think that God works in strange ways, and between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. But, you know, if we try to do this all on our own at this time in history, we're going to make some terrible, terrible mistakes. And I don't think any of us is smart enough to outwit these people who I believe, of course, are guided by very dark and sinister forces. They have a goal, a new world order, a new world religion, and, of course, a new world leader. And all we can do is, of course, hope to survive during this period of time and hope to explain to people what's really going on. But the world is run by far different people than the average person out there. Certainly, reading the newspaper has any idea. Would you agree with that concept, Joan?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm just really amazed when people call me. It depends. You know, there's just so many different, and I don't mean specifically from your show. I just mean that the people who have no idea of God the Creator and the Federal Reserve and a world governmental system and the evil through the international banking system, these people are literally babes in the hands of wolves.
And I really feel that so many people, if they're not very careful, will end up totally impoverished before this is over. And of course, as the dollar, if the dollar does continue its downward descent, people who are planning on pension when they retire are in for a big surprise. People who are planning on their CDs or their annuities or their bank deposits or their bonds to look to they're going to very well find out that they have little or no value. Surviving in times like this requires you to really have a lot of help. Anyway, we'll talk to you later, Joan. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you,
you
and
too.
God bless America.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed listening to Joan. And certainly, I mean, as you look and see what's going on today, how do you make any sense out of it? Well, of course, if you understand that they want to precipitate a crisis, they know exactly what they're doing. Alan Greenspan has done everything wrong, certainly encouraging people to take out the arms, these mortgages, not fixed mortgages, the so-called ARMs, and then, of course, adjustable rate mortgages, encouraging brokerage houses to lend money to people who did not qualify for loans, certainly keeping the interest rates low, when he knew it was going to lead to inflation, Refusing to regulate the hedge funds and the derivative markets, knowing when they came unraveled, they would destroy the basic infrastructure of our society, and then laying us open with literally trillions of dollars of debt throughout the world, and when those dollars come home, it will destroy our currency. But why? Because they want a global currency, and they've got to destroy our currency in the process. They know what they're doing. They don't want you to know. Let me suggest my talk on the financial tsunami. We are ruled by the Federal Reserve Board, a group of private central bankers who have an agenda. And they almost all tie into the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front for a secret society. If you doubt that, you need to read what Bill Clinton's mentor, Professor Quigley, said on pages 951 and 952 of his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and also on page 324 of that book. And we actually quote much of this, a little pamphlet I've written called The History of Money. Yeah, it's inexpensive. We think it's very well worthwhile. And then my talk on financial tsunami and the syllabus that comes with that will give you an excellent overview of what's going on and what you can do to try to protect yourself. But remember, you're not smart enough to outsmart these people because they have the wealth of the world and then, of course, the power of the dark forces of the universe on their side. And to put this into even better perspective, let me suggest that you get my talk on the forbidden secret, and it comes with a syllabus. My talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness comes with a book. The secret mystery of America's beginning, and this is really based upon a book written by Manly Hall, The Secret Destiny of America, which we do carry. It's a research book. You have to request it secretly. Separately, The Secret Destiny of America by Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist. He worshipped the prince of this world. And his book, Secret Destiny, really verifies much of what you'll see in The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, and then, of course, in the subsequent documentary, award-winning documentary, the Riddles in Stone, secret architecture of our nation's capital. Did you ever wonder why we're really fighting over the Middle East? Do you think we're fighting to capture Osama bin Laden? Do you think we're fighting to bring democracy to the people of Iraq? If we are, then why did we establish over there? Read the Constitution. We've established a secular state over there where everything is under Shia law. And the only thing democracy is a woman holding up an inked finger, but it doesn't represent representative government. We have established a secular authoritarian society, of course, under the control of the Shia Muslims, and there will be no freedom at all in the Iraq that we have created as we overthrew Saddam Hussein. And if you think what's going on over in Iraq today is accidental, let me ask you, if we were to take New York and we were to turn off the electricity and turn off the water and turn off the sewage and we were to dissolve the police force, what do you think would happen? There'd be chaos. Well, that's exactly what we did in Iraq. And believe me, the people who did it are brilliant. They knew what they were doing. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back again in just a moment for the second hour right here at Radio Liberty. Hail, this is Dr. Stan back here again at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owner, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, for this hour, we're hoping to have with us Barry Shamish, who is a Jewish patriot who's very, very concerned about what's going on in his land, and certainly the betrayal of the dreams and hopes of the Israeli people by a small group of people who control the leadership of all the political parties over there, and certainly with Olmert and Perez and Barak, the three names we associate with what's running Israel today, are in the process of betraying the dreams and the hopes of the Israeli people. Now, certainly we can be critical of some of the things that have happened over there, but certainly I believe that God did intend that the Jews would return to the Holy Land and would be there at this time in history, and the people in Washington, D.C., the internationalists, the globalists, really control the government of Israel, and they've force him to give up the land, Christian. Here, oh, how many times, oh my goodness, the Zionists control Washington, D.C., and I say, well, if that's true, then why have we pressured them to give up most of the West Bank? Why did we pressure them to give up, you know, Gaza? Why are we pressuring them to pull their troops out of Judea and Samaria today? Why are we simply arming, the Hamas? Oh yes, we are arming Hamas, the people who hate Israel. And of course, we sent Fatah a load of weapons, a large load of very lethal weapons, and we sent it right to a Hamas checkpoint, and of course Hamas ends up with all these weapons that were supposed to go to Fatah. We transfer money to the Fatah to support their efforts to govern, and the money accidentally gets transferred over to Hamas. And people shrugged their shoulders and said, oh, shucks, well, we just don't know how that happened. You go over into Iraq today, and we find out that 190,000 automatic weapons and pistols have just disappeared over there. We have no idea what happened to them. How could you have 190,000 automatic weapons and pistols disappear in Iraq? I mean, certainly if an American soldier loses his rifle, even if, of course, he is wounded in the process, and he may even come home, but if that rifle isn't turned in, they have a record of it, and he has to pay $750 because after he was wounded, nobody picked up his rifle and it wasn't turned in. And yet we can lose 190,000 automatic weapons in Iraq, and nobody knows what happened to them. And then another $12 billion has disappeared, and nobody knows what happened to it. And Chris, everything is, oh, shucks, we're so incompetent. Ladies and gentlemen, we are not incompetent. They just don't want the American people to know what is really going on over there as we begin preparing for a terrible war with Iran. In fact, I was reading just today where the World Bank has a long-term program of financing Iran. Now, the World Bank is America. We supply the money for it. We control who is elected president. Why is the World Bank we're financing Iran when of course we've told everybody they have to stop having anything to do with Iran? Are we helping them to get the weapons that will be used against our boys in the near future? Well, let's go to Barry Shamish. Hi, Barry. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
All right. You hang on. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest for the evening here, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Barry, you just go ahead and pick the story up. What are we going to do? You want to cover the Return of the Giants? What would you like to talk about tonight?
Well, I must say the last show was very successful. Some people immediately reacted, and they called my cell number, and they called my email number, and they wanted that DVD. I was surprised. It was really actually the best response I can remember. Now, I got to ask you, this audience doesn't know about the last show, do they?
No, they don't. This is an entirely different audience. This audience is primarily, it's in Michigan, it's in upstate New York, it's in Cincinnati, it's in Lexington, Kentucky, and then, of course, it's a shortwave and internet audience, and so they did not hear the other program. So you can go ahead and repeat yourself, and some people, of course, listen to all 5 hours a day, but they're not very many of them, so go right ahead.
Well, what we did with this book, I sent you a DVD, and you were very complimentary towards me, and I, of course, thank you for that. And by the way, I listened to your 4 DVDs yesterday, all of them while cleaning the apartment with Malachi Martin, and privately we should talk about that. Very interesting, of course. But I have a DVD of... get ready, people. It's not an easy subject. It's actually UFOs in Israel. Now, look, people, I'm going to describe a book I wrote called Return of the Giants. And we discussed just one chapter. On the DVD, it was the second... segment of the DVD I sent you, and that happened in 1987 when Avi Achrayi, who was Israel's first major UFO witness, and boy did he witness something. One day before Yom Kippur, Avi Achrayi was heading down the Tel Aviv-Haifa highway, and he saw what he described as a banana-shaped object. And he stopped his car. He thought it was a helicopter in trouble. And he pulled over to the side, and it wasn't 15 seconds, and this banana-shaped object just flew over Sheikh Mona Beach, which is a major beach over Haifa. Now, I will describe Israel at the end of the show.
All right, hold on, Tommy. Just a moment. We're just going to bring everybody back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is describing something that we did on another program about based upon a book he's written called The Return of the Giants. And it starts out, certainly, at least at this point, this is the second chapter, this is the first or second chapter of the book, but with this a Jewish fellow back in 1987, I guess it was.
Yes.
And he's driving along a road, and he sees this strange object in the sky, a banana-shaped object, and he gets out, and so you go ahead and tell the story, Barry.
Well, it's 15 meters in diameter by his estimation, and he sees it fly off, and then there's no traffic on the road. It's a major highway, by the way. The Tel Aviv-Haifa highway is a major artery, and he notices there's no traffic, and he sees the object, and he runs to a garage, a service station, where he's going to phone the police and say a helicopter's in trouble. He reaches the service station, and he sees that the object flashes a beam of light on the beach below, Sheikh Mona Beach. Now, the whole incident took about a minute. That's all. And that minute changed the life of Ami Akrai. But it also, Israel didn't have a UFO scene exactly before then, and it did after. Because after Yom Kippur, he went to the police, and the police directed him to Israel's sole ufologist back in 1987, Hadassah Arbel. She's now, by the way, a religious Hasidic Jew. She doesn't want to talk about what she knows, but back then she was alone. And he goes to the beach. This would be 2 days after Yom Kippur, and they roam around the beach looking for anything. They didn't know what to look for, and then they see an burnt onto the sands of Shikmona Beach. Well, it's the craft. It's burnt black onto the beach. Now, in this DVD that you watch, I sent samples of the sand via the sighting show, which was then on NBC, to a laboratory where Dr. Lev and Goodness crew examined this. And there's a very dramatic moment in the DVD where they put a light on the sand and it appears to be melting. Before our eyes, the sand, the black sand melts on the camera. We all see it melt. Now, this, of course, is impossible. You know, really, how do you burn sand? You can't burn sand. Now, what Dr. Levengood discovered, that there was a low-burning carbohydrate on the sand itself, and it was in the shape of the UFO. Avi Achrayi and Hadassah Arbel found the actual ship, if you can believe this. It looks like a bat. It's on, we see a picture of it. It's also in a book I wrote called Return of the Giants. But there's something very unusual about this 15-meter bat-shaped object. And the right-hand corner where the sand is not burnt, where you have vegetation and sand the way sand is supposed to be, you have a 3.5-foot, well, the driver of this object. You have a humanoid creature. I'm using the word creature. They may be more human than we are, for all we know, but it's sitting down in front of what appears to be a dashboard. Believe it or not, the dashboard was in this burnt object on the sands of Shikmona Beach. There is an actual photo of the driver of this UFO. Now, people, before you rush to judgment on this, this was very well known in Israel.
Now, Barry, was this simply an area of sand that was burnt? There wasn't any actual craft there. This was simply an imprint of the craft?
Yes.
All right.
It was, well, to use probably the wrong metaphor here, it was like a photograph.
Okay.
Well, you get the idea. They beamed something onto the sand. They beamed the image of the craft, and they appeared to beam the pilot of the craft. Now, people, this is important, lest you believe that I'm talking about something unknown. This was front page headlines in Israel. Just know this. It was. Okay, I have a DVD and a book, and we'll talk about that. However, Avi Achrayi and Hadassah Arbel find the imprint, and the next day it makes Israeli papers. Hadassah Arbel was very well known as a ufologist. Front page headlines. Now, all of a sudden, the very tiny ufology community of Israel descend on this. Well, picture, okay, for lack of a better word, photograph. Something beamed onto Shikmona Beach, and they take the sand, and they test it. It was tested in the Technion, which is Israel's MIT. It was found to have 6,000 times the magnetism of the surrounding sand, and there were serious tests done on this object. Now, I want you to know something. What is Shikmona Beach and what I did? And this is important. About 150 yards up is a cliff. On that cliff is something called Elijah's Shrine. This is the tomb of the prophet Elijah. Not the tomb, but the place where the Bible says that 2,400 years ago he died and was taken off in a whirlpool. This is in the Bible, believe it or not. And a tomb was built over where the whirlpool took Elijah away. Now, just so you know, I'm jumping ahead right now. I'm jumping ahead by about 2 years, where Michael Heseman, a German, not just ufologist, he had a very popular UFO magazine. In the world of ufology, he was number one. He was a real big guy. And, by the way, he was a very nice guy. We became friends. But nonetheless, he went inside the tomb, and lo and behold, on the wall was a drawing, 2,400 years old, of the exact, and I say exact, drawing of this UFO on the beaches of Shikmona Beach, 2,400 years earlier. For some reason, they drew this, well, what can you say? I will say bat-like shape craft for now. We'll go backwards on why I say that. But why Shikmona Beach was important. Number one, I went there with my little Olympus camera. There is a very important archaeological site on the beach, not even 20 yards where this beam of light created a UFO. There are circles, one very, very outstanding circle, a perfectly round stone circle in the water. When the tide goes out, there it is, a round circle 15 meters in diameter. So I went next door. There's a marine biology institute right at Shikmona Beach, and I asked the scientist, what did I just take a picture of? What is this round 15 meter diameter thing that I just photographed? They told me it was a mikveh. A mikveh is a Jewish ritual bath. And I said, why would someone put a mikveh next to the ocean? And, you know, mikvehs were a ritual bath away from water. Why would someone put it on the beach? And they told me there was an earthquake and the beach had sunk, and they gave me this explanation and that. I don't believe it was a mikveh. I believe this site was there for a reason, but I don't believe it was a mikveh. Now, I'm going to skip, and I'm going to go back to my evening with Ami Akrayi, but I want you to know there were two more incidents at Shikmona Beach. 6 months later, in I believe it was January of February of 1988, one gentleman was on the beach. It's in my book, the details. Once again, a UFO was over the beach. Once again, it beams itself onto the beach, and lo and behold, you have another photograph of a 15 meter in diameter UFO, this time without the driver. But nonetheless, you have a second one beamed onto Shikmona Beach. Now, when this happened, all the papers of Israel put it on the front pages. Shikmona is hit again. Now, this time round, thousands of people went to see the UFO that was beamed on Shikmona Beach. And I always say this because it happened again, and when we do future shows, I will talk about the ice cream truck. There were so many people, there was an ice cream truck selling ice cream to the people looking at the UFO. Next, 6 months later, July 1988, there were two teenagers. One was Amnon Eilat was one name. It doesn't matter. Anyone who wants my book will read the names. They watch another UFO, and suddenly there's it attempts to beam something on Shikmona Beach. Instead, it explodes into thousands of pieces.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Barry Shemich. Go right ahead, Barry. Anyway, of course, this is shortly after the second sighting, and then...
Well, 6 months after.
All right, fine. So
there were three sightings in a year and a half.
Right. And this explodes. Is there a debris field there?
Boy, is there a debris field. Thousands of shards. Now, once again, the ufologist, the guy's name was Grief. It was, I believe it was, oh, my Lord, it was Hanan Grief or Avi Grief. Nonetheless, I interviewed him for my book. He sends the usual crew from Haifa. In the water of the Mediterranean are shining, burning shards. And they pick up the shards, and the shards, you take them out of water, they turn to white sand in front of their eyes. Now, this white sand was tested also by me. I got some of it, and I sent it to the sightings laboratory. It was pure magnesium. All right, let's summarize before people think that this is fantasy. It is not fantasy. It actually happened in Israel in 1987, 1988. One Ami Akrai burnt UFO with the actual pilot in the right-hand corner of the UFO. This is on the DVD. You saw it. Other people who ordered it will soon see it. Next. 6 months later, February of 1988, another UFO, one other witness, lots of media coverage. Then, I believe it was July of 88, if not June, Avi Eilat and his girlfriend, it's all in the book, watching a UFO explode. Now, here's what's important. Now, believe me, I am not discussing this in terms of the Bible and purpose. This is just a fact. About 2,400 years ago, the prophet Elijah challenged the Canaanites to a duel. The duel is in the what you call the Old Testament, what we call the Hebrew Scriptures or the Tanakh. Nonetheless, he says to the Canaanites, "My God can roast a bull. Can your gods roast a bull?" So the Canaanites tether a bull on the Carmel Mountains, 150 yards up from where the UFO sightings were, and they wait all night, nothing. Then it is Elijah's turn, he tethers the bull, and there is a ray from the heavens, and the bull becomes lunch. He roasts the bull because of this ray from the heavens. That happened at Shikmona Beach. And they built a shrine to Elijah. Now, we return to Michael Hesseman. He goes into Shikmona's shrine, into the shrine of Elijah. He finds the exact UFO, and he films it. And by the way, this is all over European UFO sites and European television. I hosted Michael at least 3-4 times, maybe more. Nonetheless, to make the story simple, he believes that the drawing, the 2,400-year-old drawing, is the same as the UFO that hit Shikmona Beach in 1987-88. Now we're going to go forward, so I don't...
Would you hold that thought? We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is saying that this spot down here is very, very famous in biblical history, because it was here that that Elijah had offered a challenge to the Canaanite priest. You know, can your God roast a bull? My God can, and because the Canaanites tie up a bull there, nothing happens, and Elijah ties up a bull, and a beam comes down from above and roasts a bull, and that's pretty remarkable sort of thing. Now, then, of course, there is a shrine to Elijah there, and in that shrine is a picture which is almost identical to this UFO that had been seen flying over the beach, whose actually image was etched in the sand there. So pick up the story from there, Barry.
People, I'm going to do something daring. If you want to order the DVD, 50 were made in New York. Here is my cell number. Call me tomorrow. 904-501-7605. I'll do it again. 904-501-7605. Or email me at Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, at NetVision, N-E-T-V-I-S-I-O-N, .net, N-E-T.il, Chamish at netvision.net.il. I will send you this DVD. It doesn't even have a label on it yet. Nonetheless, there are only 50, and I sold a whole bunch from the last show, believe it or not. Now I'm going to go, I'm going to jump forward now, and we'll do other shows on this subject, but the crew of Sightings comes to Israel, and I did 5 shows with them. 4 of them I'm the actual host, as you saw. Nonetheless, the crew went into Elijah's shrine. And they saw the drawing, and they said to me, "We're not going to broadcast it." Yes, it looks like the UFO, but it could be a bat. And I said, "Why would they put a bat on the walls of this shrine?" They said they could have, and we're not going to show this drawing. People, it's on this DVD. You decide if it was a bat or not. I personally don't. I think there was a direct significance. And by the way, I do believe, and in future shows with Dr. Stan, I will talk about the return of the Nephilim, where the actual giants showed up. And while Oslo, the so-called peace accord, which will destroy Israel, was being formulated, the 7-foot giants showed up. Nonetheless, let's go backwards.
Let me just comment on that. Barry is commenting, of course, that at one time when the Oslo Accord was being negotiated, which is a terrible thing for Israel, because the Oslo Accord would, if it were enacted, would have actually ended Israel as we know it. Why, of course, suddenly the people, certain people, are seeing these giants, and not only seeing the giants, sometimes the giants talk to them. And, of course, what does this have to do with anything? Well, you remember, of course, there was something called the Nephilim that go back to the time of, before the flood, the antediluvian period. And we're told, of course, in the Christian Bible that Christ was asked, you know, what will it be like, you know, when you return? And as he said, as it was in the days of Noah, which was the antediluvian period. Well, anyway, go ahead and pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, why not confuse issues some more?
Well, I'm trying to clarify it for our listeners out there.
Lord, there's no clarifying this stuff, my Lord. You think I understand what's going on here? I went there as a journalist because no one else was covering it. I just did it. But nonetheless, I was in New York 2 weeks ago, and I was in synagogue for Tisha B'Av. Excuse me. Tisha B'Av is the fast commemorating the destruction of the first and second temples, and the parasha, that is the chapter of the Torah read on Tisha B'Av, is all giants. It starts with the Nephilim, they become the Rephaim, they become the Zamzumim. Joshua sends his scouts out to look at Canaan for the first time after finally reaching it, and he reports back that the Rephaim, the giants, have made an alliance, and they exist in Canaan, and the Zamzumim, which is another word for the giants, have also made alliances there. Look, I don't know if any of this is biblical. I really don't. But the Bible was not surprised. Joshua's scouts were not surprised that there were giants in the land. They reported back to Moses.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. I was so fascinated with the conversation, I almost missed that break. So you go right ahead, Barry.
Look, I'm not trying to justify prophetic anything. I just went there as a journalist. Now, I also spent a very long night with Avi Akrai as a journalist. Okay, now, Avi Akrai was a mechanic. He was a very simple guy. He saw this thing beam, this craft onto Shikmona Beach, and he had a very weird experience. All of a sudden, wherever he went, in front of his eyes were letters, actual letters. And he wrote the letters on a piece of paper, and then his wife started seeing the letters, and then his daughter started seeing the letters. It's all in my book. Now, the letters were finally transliterated. Somebody finally took the drawings and said, this is ancient Hebrew. And believe me, this is not a guy who knew ancient Hebrew.
Now, was he the first man who actually saw this there on the highway between Haifa and Tel Aviv?
He was the only man.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Now, whatever happened, when I went to his house, he had a cult following by then. He had people showing up. They had three different people showing up to meet Avi Akrai. He had hundreds of people believing something happened to him. Now, I want to add something. I like him, by the way. And as I said on this DVD, you'll see Avi, it's not the clearest of the five DVDs, five videos on the DVD. I had to get a second-hand long story, but neither here nor there, we meet Avi Akrai, and he's a very simple guy. And by the way, later on in the book, we'll talk about other very simple people who were witnesses to this stuff. Nonetheless, Avi Akrai started seeing ancient Hebrew letters. He would be driving in his car. He would have to pull his car to the side, because the letters were blocking the road. This actually happened to him. I don't believe he was lying to me. But that's neither here nor there. I want to tell you a little story about my evening with Avi Akrai.
All right, well, I want you to hold off on that just for a moment as we bring our other stations back on board. But certainly what you're describing is something that cannot be explained rationally, but almost as if it were a metaphysical experience that this gentleman is experiencing. Hang on there.
I'm here.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Avi, pardon me, Barry had the opportunity of talking to many of these people. Barry's an investigative reporter. It's a fascinating story, and certainly sightings wants to get this material, and it did feature Barry on a number of programs, and you'll actually see him on the DVD. But one of the things that happened was that this man who had seen the first sighting in Israel back in 1987, suddenly he would see these figures, these letters, before him in his mind, where they... but he would see these, and sometimes it'd be there when he's driving around, and he can't even drive because these letters are blocking his vision. And even his wife is seeing these letters, and then it turns out that they're not regular Hebrew at all. It's ancient Hebrew. And of course, what this is some sort of a metaphysical phenomenon. Here's this poor guy, and he just wants to get on with his life, and whatever it was that he had seen was beginning almost like it was haunting him or following him or controlling his mind. So Barry's over there talking to him. You pick up the story there, Barry.
And 10 minutes before the end, let me do Israel. Israel had a very bad week.
All right.
And I haven't even written about it. I'm so upset. But let's go back to this story. I think it's connected to the downfall of Israel. In fact, I know it is somehow. I don't know how. I never make a claim that I actually understand what the heck I'm doing, but that's what I did. I interviewed people in Israel who were witnesses to some very strange phenomena. Let me interrupt you first. Dr. Stan, you saw the about 15 minutes of UFOs that I put in this DVD. Have you ever seen UFOs like that before?
Never have, I'll have to admit. And whatever they are, they're very, very strange. And these were all, of course, privately taken videos, but buried, accumulated, and he puts them in there. And you see these various shapes. Some of them are very, very similar, though. Or they'll change shape from night to night, and you'll see them taken with the same camera, and yet, of course, they've changed their appearance. So, I mean, these really, there's no question there's something there. The question is, what is this? What is the manifestation of? Though it's a very interesting DVD, and all the sequences of all the privately taken pictures of the UFOs. So pick this story up there.
Okay, now understand, these UFOs were not seen in Lebanon or Jordan or Syria. They were just Israel. Okay, so something, look, why would the world's weirdest UFOs pounce on Israel all at the same moment? And by the way, I'm going to say it again, these were all filmed, and I was in those days, not anymore because it stopped at about 1999, neither here nor there. At the time, I was really a world expert on UFOs because they were happening in Israel, and I took an interest, and I went and interviewed the people, and I collected the UFOs, and again, really, mostly, it was just to earn a living. It was a story no one else was covering. I found it very interesting, and we'll see why shortly. And it, in the world of UFOs, it may be quite well known at the time, but neither here nor there, back to Ami Akrai. After my evening with him, I had to drive home from Haifa to Modi'in, about 2 hours. I got the car, was very stormy. All of a sudden, a very nasty storm erupted, and the lights in my car disappeared. I didn't have lights. Now, I want to get home. I didn't want to stay on the side of the road somewhere just south of Haifa. I had no lights. Now, I managed to get home in about 4 hours by following the side of the road very, very slowly. The next day, I took the car into the garage. They said, I think it was a fallen wire or a fuse. Neither here nor there. My lights disappeared. That never happened before. It was a very spooky experience interviewing this guy for me personally. Now, I want you to know I was in the Israeli Air Force. I shot down airplanes. I shot missiles. Today they're known as Stingers. In my day they were known as Red Eyes. But I shot missiles and airplanes. Now, they used to give us lectures. Pilots would come and tell us how to shoot down enemy aircraft, and I was on the biggest air bases in Israel, Ramat David and Tel Nof. These were the biggest air bases, and by the way, that's not something the Arabs can use. They know all about these bases. And when I would stay behind after we got these lectures on how to aim best and knocked down enemy aircraft, which, by the way, in the Lebanon War, we knocked down 3 of them, so I guess they gave us a good lesson. I would talk to the pilots, and I would ask them, did you ever chase UFOs? And I was in the Air Force. They talked to me very frankly. Why not? We're fellow soldiers. They had a much more daring task than I did, but neither here nor there. We were all the same uniform, and they all chased UFOs, all of them. Now, the summer of 1980, you should know that not just Israel, I actually took a vacation to Canada. These things were in the sky then, and they're not now. There were squadrons of satellites, except in threes and fives, even nines. But these satellites could do things that we can't do. Human beings cannot stop on a dime and do 90-degree turns in the middle of the sky. That's what was going on, but we had the equipment to watch them. We had the binoculars. We were trained to know what was supposed to be in the sky. And, well, Adam and Yaakov and all the guys who were on my side, we would stay up every night and watch these things. And by the end of, let's say, 3 weeks, even the skeptics were wondering what was in the sky above Israel. And by the way, it was not just above Israel. That's important. Neither here nor there, we went to our officers because this was damaging the unity of our squadrons. We had 6 squadrons, and we were fighting. I said they were UFOs. I got people on my side. Other people said they were secret weapons. Nonetheless, we went to our officers, and we said we want an explanation. What the heck are we watching at night? Now, one morning, and I recall this morning distinctly above all other mornings, we were all told to get up and line up in formation. Formation were lines of 3, with the second last line being 1 or 2 if there were spare numbers. And they told us to stand, first of all, attention. In Hebrew, it's Amod Akshev. And then an officer came. We called them falafels. He had 2 maple leaves on his shoulders. I guess he was a colonel. And then they would tell us to stand at ease, Amod Dum. And he said he was from the meteorological division of the IDF. Forget the base. I know the base. It doesn't matter. He said, we understand that you people, meaning us, the Chaparral division, we shot Chaparral missiles, have been seeing strange things in the sky at night. And then he says to us, you will tell no one about them or you will stand trial. You will not spread rumors. It's not your function as a soldier to scare the country. And then he stands back. Our officers say to stand at attention, and he left. He threatened us with a trial if we told the truth. Okay, just so you know, the Israeli Air Force knows plenty about these UFOs, and I can tell you why, because I was in the Israeli Air Force.
And I'm sure it's the same with our own military as well. And the last thing they want is for the people generally to know the truth about what these really are. But you go ahead with your story, Barry.
How much time do we have, Dr. Well,
we've Stan? Got about we've got about 9 minutes at all before we go to the break. So why you could talk about Israel this last week?
All right. I think we should, because it was a bad week. Number one, go get my book, people. It's on lulu.com. lulu.com. You write my name in the corner where it says search Chamish. 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 Go get Return of the Giants. Now, I would love to send you a book as well, but I have no control over this. So I can only suggest that for less than $20 you get the book and you have the details of these sightings. And people, if you want the DVD, here's my cell number, 904-501-7605, 904-501-7605, or write me at Chamish, Chamish, at netvision, netvision.net, net.il, Chamish at netvision.net.il. Also, you can go to my website. Just write BarryChamish.com. Barry, of course, B-A-R-R-Y, and Chamish, Chamish.com. And at least you'll find out about the real stuff that I do. The UFO stuff took about 2 years of my life, and it seems to be dominating my life lately. But this was the week of the Hebron withdrawal. Now, people, I'm going to write about this. I'm too depressed to write about it. And actually, for this show, I have these notes in front of me about how depressing it really is. Look, Hebron this week saw 3,000 Israeli soldiers surrounding two houses. That's it. 20 people bought houses. The army a year and a half ago promised them that they would make the neighborhood legal. It was called Shalhevet Neighborhood, named after a 10-year-old baby shot by terrorists. 11 of the families left their homes without compensation, that goes without saying. Two stayed behind. The army sent 3,000 soldiers, not just to evict them, to destroy their homes, utterly wreck their homes. Now, I have the pictures of the destruction. I was going to send it out. I'm too depressed, and here is why. The settlers did not come to face down the army. They are being removed piece by piece. In every respect, all of Judea and Samaria faces the same fate as Gaza. And they're doing it like a salami. They're cutting up Judea and Samaria piece by piece. And where were the settlers to confront these vicious IDF soldiers? They weren't there. And this to me was, I have another book. It's called Bye Bye Gaza. You also get it at lulu.com. You want to know the infiltration of the settlers, how they no longer have anyone leading them. You get Bye Bye Gaza. What a weird combination, isn't it? Return of the Giants and Bye Bye Gaza. Really, I don't even understand why I'm writing this stuff anymore, but it's all true. The settlers stayed home and watched TV while two families were removed from their homes in Hebron, and that's the end of the Jewish presence in downtown Hebron next to the army. They founded that neighborhood in 1807. All right, I'm going to say it again. 1807, it was a Jewish neighborhood. And the Israeli army, the Banana Republic army, the army, little by little, no one wants to serve in, remove these settlers violently, destroyed their homes, and where were the settlers? Why weren't there 200,000 of them in Hebron facing down the Israeli army? And I'm so depressed I can't write a word. I know what I have to write, and I don't want to write it. It's the end of Israel. It's now the end of Hebron. After that, the slavery will be cut up because the Israeli government is taking orders from two major sources. The Vatican, that's number one. The Council on Foreign Relations, that's number two. They appear to be working together. In fact, they are working together. The settlers, who are really the most honest, decent people in Israel, could have cut a peace agreement with the Arabs. And by the way, the Arabs are not very honest. They are very, very savage. It's a horrible situation, but they could have actually had a peace deal if somebody wanted it. But somebody decided that Israel goes down the drain. Now again, does this have anything to do with Ami Akrai and the burnt UFO in Shikmona Beach? Darned if I know. I don't have the answer to that, but I sure suspect as much. And if we have another show, well, we can go on to the next section of my book, Return of the Giants, where the Israeli army, almost 500 soldiers, tracked a UFO from Beitar to the Jordan Valley and back, and we can even talk about how the Israeli army knows that there was a major UFO incident and they tried to shoot down the UFO. I guess that's the next thing coming up. Should I go on with Hebron?
You go right ahead here.
All right. The settlers have done two things this week. One, they released the names of 30 IDF soldiers who would not participate in this horrible fiasco. Now, that's good. 12 of them so far have been sent to prison for refusing outright to be used as a soldier of the Jewish army to remove Jews from their homes.
I think that that is phenomenal. I think that really is to their credit, and I hope it's just the beginning of the rupture of the dike.
It won't be. That's the whole problem. That's what worries me so much. Now, the very few settlers, and it's not settlers, these are actually people who live in Israel. Professor Hillel Weiss.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Our guest has been Barry Shemesh. I hope you've enjoyed the program. Go right ahead, Barry.
Professor Hillel Weiss, a man I consider my close friend, and he is my close friend. He was the first professor who went on Israeli television and said that Barry Shemesh is right. Rabin was murdered in a conspiracy. He did that when Israel only had two television stations. I am forever in his debt. His daughter was one of the people removed from the two houses in Hebron. And he went up to the commander of the IDF and he said the following, I hope your wife becomes a widow. That's what he said and was caught on camera. And now he is in deep trouble. And he will probably, if I know Bar-Ilan University, those cowards, fire him. This is a close friend of mine who knew Rabin was murdered by Shimon Peres. And he went on TV and said, I'm right. His daughter was in one of the two homes in Hebron. That's all I can tell you. What the very few settlers left who actually give a damn have done is also gathered the names of the officers in charge of the IDF for removing the Jews from their homes in Hebron, homes that have been occupied at least since 1807. And in two cases, Major General Stern, who, like I say, he lives in Judean Samaria. He lives in Elazar, a part of the Gush Etzion settlement. There's another officer who lives in Tekoa, part of the Gush Etzion settlement. They are living a nightmare because the settlers won't even let them live. General Stern had a wedding. His daughter got married. He had more protesters than guests. These people have been totally used and infiltrated. They're living amongst the settlers for only one reason, to destroy the settlements of Judea and Samaria. And at least, they're being harassed to death. But frankly, and I've said this before, our Sabbatean Frankist government has been killing the settlers. I have been documenting it all year long, but the settlers kill nobody. That's the whole point. They're not fighting on an even field.
DeBerry, we're out of time. God bless, and we'll talk to you later. We'll get some programs next week.
Friday Bye-bye. At 7, we'll meet again.
Right.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope that you enjoyed our conversation with Barry Shemesh. I know I always do, and he will give us tremendous insight into what's going on over in Israel. And whether you or not you know it, but what's happening in Israel is going to have a profound impact on what's going on here in America, because I believe that the Jews returning to Israel was part of God's plan, and I believe that we are moving into a war in the Near East, in the Middle East, that will have a profound impact on the lives of everyone in this country. If you've never seen my talk on Iraq, The Untold Story, it's really a story of all of the wars of the last century, every one of them contrived and fought to bring about a world government. The First World War was fought to bring about the League of Nations. The Second World War was fought to bring about the United Nations. Korean War was really a no-win war to allay the apprehension of the American people, who wondered why the American government had turned both China and Eastern Europe over to the communists. Vietnam was simply a distraction as they brought socialism to America and began to destroy the very foundation of our religious freedom, the foundation of our Constitution. And now the present no-win wars, we're fighting in both Afghanistan and Iraq, are a prelude to a war with Iran. Why? Well, you certainly want to hear my talk, Iraq, the Untold Story, or if you want to see another version of it, it's the War, the Untold, or War, the Untold Story. Both of them are essentially the same story, and then, of course, you'll want to get the syllabus that goes with that. But to understand what's really going on, you need to get our 4-tape set on the supernatural. You need to get our a book that goes with that, The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson. You need to get my talk on The Forbidden Secret, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and Chris has a book with by that title. There's a syllabus that goes with The Forbidden Secret. You want to get, of course, the 4-tape set on The Secret Behind the Secret, and what Rhonda Byrne tells you about the law of attraction, and to really understand what she is talking about. And then you must understand there is another dimension there. There is a spiritual dimension. Certainly Barry's been talking about UFOs. Well, you certainly should get the book we carry called Alien Encounters. There is another dimension. And until we understand that there are people and beings that bridge the two dimensions, this is, of course, with the mediums and the fortune tellers and the diviners and the water witchers and the witches do. You need to get our 3-pamphlet set on the occult hierarchy. You need to understand that we are involved not in a political, ideological, or cultural battle, but a spiritual battle that is being fought on a ideological, cultural, and spiritual battlefield. And until people understand what this is really about, but probably the best single source of information, Forbidden Secret. It's a DVD or video, and as I said earlier, there's a tape that comes with that, pardon me, a syllabus that comes with that, the very excellent, professionally done DVD, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginnings, and then the second of the series, which is really fascinating. It's called Riddles in Stone, and I want you to know I play a small part in both of those, trying to let people understand about this spiritual battle that's taking place today, a battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And of course, UFOs play an important part in this, because they bridge this barrier between the spiritual dimension and the material dimension in which we live. Understand, of course, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be when the time of the return of our Lord. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.